Today is Wednesday, March 6th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up...
This situation has been exacerbated by sanctions, and the resulting current political, economic, social, and institutional crisis is alarming.
That's UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Michelle Bachelet speaking today on the social and economic conditions in Venezuela. Also ahead, North Korea is reportedly rebuilding a key missile testing and launch site, and the United Nations urges immediate action to tackle excess nitrogen pollution affecting ecosystems and human health. It's all on today's International Edition. North Korea is reportedly rebuilding a key missile testing and launch site, according to information gained by South Korea and two private U.S. research centers. Several reports, including South Korea's Yonhap News Agency, said today that intelligence officials informed lawmakers at a closed-door hearing that work is taking place at the Sohae Satellite Launching Station in the northwest region of Tongchang-ri. The revelations of new activity at Tongchang-ri comes just days after Trump and Kim abruptly ended their second summit in Hanoi, Vietnam. The talks broke down over Washington's insistence on a solid commitment towards denuclearization from Pyongyang in exchange for any lifting of sanctions. North Korea began dismantling the Sohae facility after last June's historic first summit between leader Kim Jong-un and U.S. President Donald Trump in Singapore, where they reached a vague agreement for the North to end its nuclear weapons and ballistic missile testing programs. I spoke with VOA's Steve Miller in Seoul about this new information.
Well, we had a number of reports coming out not only from South Korea's National Intelligence Service, but also CSIS. There had been some activity at the Tongari missile site, which is also known as Sohae. And what they've seen is some minor repairs to that facility over the last few weeks. They estimate sometime between the middle of February up to the first part of March, which also coincided with the second summit between President Trump and Kim Jong-un from North Korea in Hanoi. Largely, that facility has been dormant for the last year or so as North Korea has suspended testing of its weapons systems. But officials here in South Korea haven't given any more details as to what exactly is going on there. We only have the information from the satellite images from CSIS and the report from NIS.
Is this revelation a surprise, considering it is coming out on the heels of President Trump and North Korean leader Kim's summit in Hanoi?
Well, it depends on who you ask. Several analysts have said that there are other test facilities that North Korea could use to test their long-range rockets. This one, the Sohae site, is the most famous. This is where they launched their ICBM tests and their other long-range and medium-range missiles. So it's the most well-known. It's also the one that Kim Jong-un pledged to dismantle when he met with Moon Jae-in earlier in 2018 as well. So it's unclear really as to whether it's a surprise or not. When officials were asked here in South Korea for comment on it, they wouldn't do that. And repeated requests to the Blue House, the presidential office here, went unanswered as well.
President Trump is saying that he has a good relationship with Kim. So what kind of an effect would this have on their relationship?
It's really unclear. You have to take a look at some of the statements that National Security Advisor Bolton made to Fox News just on Tuesday, saying that unless North Korea was really willing to abandon its missile programs, that the United States would pursue stronger sanctions against North Korea. And if you go back to the January 1st address by Kim Jong-un and other North Korean media, they said that unless the United States would alleviate all the sanctions against Pyongyang, they would quickly resume their missile testing and nuclear programs. So without a deal in Hanoi, this was the path that North Korea said it would take. Whether or not it's directly related to what happened in Hanoi remains to be seen.
That was VOA's Steve Miller in Seoul. Well, the House of Representatives Intelligence Committee is continuing its investigation of President Donald Trump and people who work with him. The president's former attorney, Michael Cohen, is to speak to the Intelligence Committee in a hearing that is not open to the public today. Cohen made three appearances before House and Senate committees last week. He strongly criticized the president, saying Trump directed him to lie in previous congressional testimony. In December, Cohen was sentenced to 3 years in prison for lying to officials and tax-related charges. In another development, the heads of three House committees made a joint request that the Trump administration turn over records of communications between Trump and Russian President Vladimir Putin. Trump has denied wrongdoing and has denounced the congressional investigations, saying they are for political reasons. A report about special counsel Robert Mueller's investigation into possible ties between the Trump presidential campaign and Russia is expected to be released in the near future. The United Nations human rights chief says sanctions against Venezuela have worsened the political crisis there. UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Michelle Bachelet said today that social and economic conditions in Venezuela continue to spiral downward. She criticized Venezuela's embattled president Nicolas Maduro, saying Venezuela shows how violations of civil and political rights can speed the worsening of economic and social rights.
This situation has been exacerbated by sanctions, and the resulting current political, economic, social, and institutional crisis is alarming.
Bachelet made the comments while delivering the rights agency's yearly report. Venezuelans suffer high inflation and a lack of basic goods, including food and medicine. A large number have fled the country to neighboring Colombia and Brazil. The United States and about 50 other nations have recognized opposition politician Juan Guaido as Venezuela's interim leader. Elliot Abrams, U.S. special diplomat for Venezuela, said yesterday that Washington is considering other measures to increase pressure on Maduro to step aside. Among the top stories in the world, Democrats in the U.S. House of Representatives are planning to condemn both Islamophobia and anti-Semitism as they rebuke a new Democratic lawmaker, a Somali-American Muslim who has criticized Israel in ways that many find offensive. A bomb and gun attack today in eastern Afghanistan kills at least 17 people, mostly employees of a local construction company. And a Pakistan court adjourns for 20 days in a gang rape case that has lasted for 17 years. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOAnews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is VOA's International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
British researchers writing in the journal Nature recently announced that a second person who ended antiviral therapy is undergoing a sustained remission from HIV-1. Like the Berlin patient, the first subject who has been in remission from the virus since 2009, this second patient was treated with stem cell transplants that came from donors who carried a genetic mutation of an HIV receptor called CCR5. The patient in the recent Nature study has been identified as a male from the UK who so far has been off his antiviral medications for 18 months. The study authors note that while it's too early to determine with any confidence that the patient has been cured of HIV, they will continue to check up on his condition. The World Health Organization says some 36.9 million people around the world are living with the HIV virus. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is VOA's International Edition. The United Nations is urging action to tackle excess nitrogen pollution affecting ecosystems and human health, calling it one of the most challenging issues facing humanity today. There are also concerns about the thaw of permafrost and the possible release of greenhouse gases. VOA's Ruben Chama reports from the UN Environment Headquarters in Nairobi.
Releasing a new report in Nairobi, scientists and UN experts said excess nitrogen pollution has tremendous consequences on humans and the environment. Joyce Msuya is acting executive director of the UN Environment.
In the first decade of the 20th century, two German chemists developed a way to produce synthetic nitrogen cheaply and on a large scale. And today, $200 billion of reactive nitrogen is lost in our waterways and triggering dead zones and toxic alga blooms.
The 78-page report says nitrogen pollution is seriously affecting ecosystems, human health, livelihoods, and economies. Martin Capel is the head of Thematic Assessments Unit at the UN Environment Science Division.
6 years ago, the UN Environment Program alerted the world about the pollution by nitrogen that is happening globally. Unfortunately, the world continues to cause nitrogen pollution, contributing to reduced air quality, deteriorating nature, increased climate change, and the depletion of the ozone layer. And we are not very aware often of these impacts.
But he says there are some signs of hope.
In recent years, we have seen a transformation in approaches to managing nitrogen pollution. The circular economy model is one solution that addresses the efficient use of nitrogen fertilizers in agriculture. It aims to maximize the efficiency of using nitrogen fertilizer, a reduction in nitrogen loss in the environment, and importantly, helping to recover and recycle nitrogen-rich organic waste back into the circular economy.
From breathtaking advances in modern biotechnology to pitfalls in climate adaptation, the researchers explored the biggest emerging environmental issues that will have profound effects on our society, economy, and ecosystems. The report also warns that the Arctic is warming twice as fast as the global average, and scientists are increasingly concerned at the accelerating rate of permafrost thaw. Diana Kopansky is a senior scientist and global peatlands coordinator at the UN Environment's Ecosystems Division.
The risk associated with permafrost degradation is really especially critical, and it could lead to significant amounts of carbon dioxide and methane. This could turn the current situation into a no-going-back situation and strongly reinforce global warming. But peatlands don't only house carbon. They're also incredible homes to some of the most unique, rare, and threatened biodiversity of the world. They're incredible buffers. They do a tremendous job in increasing resilience, holding and releasing water for hydrological needs in times of flood and drought.
Permafrost peatlands are found in Arctic regions of Canada, America, Russia, and Denmark. They not only store high volumes of greenhouse gases, but are home to some of the world's most unique, rare, and threatened biodiversity of the world. However, Capel says the Arctic is warming twice as fast as the global average.
And just in the several decades from now, the environment around the North Pole will look quite different from that of today, because some kind of melting is taking place, thawing, leading to the release of carbon into the atmosphere. So these permafrost peatlands are undergoing those rapid alterations, and the climate change that is disrupting this intricate relationship among peat, plants, water, and ice, also affecting human communities of the Inuit, for instance, in Canada and Greenland.
Climate scientists suggest that a 5% near-surface permafrost loss by 2050, and experts expect those regions to become a carbon source by 2100. According to the UN Environment, the report titled Frontiers 2018-2019, Emerging Issues of Environmental Concern, was compiled by a network of scientists, experts, and institutions from across the world. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
This is VOA's International Edition.
On the next edition of VOA's Encounter, it's the politics and substance of the recent Trump-Kim summit. Did this second meeting between the North Korean dictator and U.S. President Donald Trump yield more than just a photo op and vague promises about denuclearization? Two regional experts will join guest host Jeffrey Young for a review. That's Encounter, this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
What is it like to study in the United States, and what do you have to do to get here? The Student Union is VOA's blog, that follows students from all over the world as they face challenges and opportunities of studying at American universities. Log on at blogs.voanews.com/student-union.
UN Human Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet warns that growing social, economic, and political inequalities are increasing alienation and instability in countries throughout the world. The High Commissioner presented a sweeping view of major human rights situations around the world in a speech to the UN Human Rights Council in Geneva. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA.
Michelle Bachelet says inequalities in income, opportunity, justice, and the enjoyment of human rights exist in all countries, rich and poor alike. Tackling these inequalities, she says, is critical in overcoming the grievances and unrest that fuel hatred, violence, and threats to peace. Bachelet cites many examples of countries where the denial of rights has led to protests and violent crackdowns by security forces. She mentions Sudan, where people protesting harsh economic conditions and bad governance have been violently dispersed by security forces. She notes similar scenarios are playing out in many other places, including Zimbabwe, Haiti, France, Venezuela, Nicaragua, and the occupied Palestinian territory. Bachelet says she is shocked by the number of killings of human rights defenders around the world. She expresses alarm at the increasingly widespread attacks on journalists and media freedoms. The human rights chief says she is very concerned about government reprisals against victims, human rights defenders, and non-governmental organizations who cooperate with the United Nations.
Today, allow me to voice my concern at the apparently arbitrary arrest and detention and alleged ill treatment or torture of several women human rights defenders in Saudi Arabia. The persecution of peaceful activists will clearly contradict the spirit of the country's proclaimed new reforms. So we urge that these women be released.
Bachelet condemns the detention of members of the Uyghur Muslim minority in what China calls re-education centers in its Xinjiang province. Activists say that about 1 million Uyghurs are kept in what they call detention centers. Bachelet also does not shy away from criticizing the United States' migration policy. Thousands of migrant children have been separated from their families during border crossings into the U.S. Separately, Bachelet calls on Australia to implement more humane policies toward hundreds of migrants detained on Manus Island and Nauru. She says inequalities undermine social progress and economic and political stability, whereas human rights build hope. The High Commissioner urges nations to do away with the divisive, destructive forces of repression in favor of principled and more effective policies grounded in human rights. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Thank you, Lisa. Well, Pope Francis has told employees of the Vatican's secret archives the church is not afraid of history and announced he has decided to open files on wartime Pope Pius XII, a move Jews have been requesting for decades. Some Jews have accused the World War II era Pope of staying silent on the Holocaust. Archives spanning the 19-year pontificate will be open to researchers in a year. Sabina Castelfranco has more for VOA.
Normally, the Vatican waits 70 years after a pontificate ends to make available the relevant archives. But in the case of Pope Pius XII, who headed the Catholic Church from 1939 to 1958 and during most of the Second World War, Pope Francis decided the files would be opened up to scholars 8 years early instead of in 2028. On March 2, 2020, scholars and researchers will be able to access all files relevant to the papacy of Pius XII. The wartime pontiff has often been accused of turning a blind eye to the horrors of the Holocaust. Critics say he failed to do enough to help Jews or even intervene adequately to stop persecution perpetrated by Nazi Germany. The Vatican, for its part, has defended Pope Pius, saying he did what he could using secret diplomacy. This is a position Pope Francis shares. Francis has said Pope Pius was criticized with some prejudice and exaggeration and expressed the conviction that Pius's papacy would hold up to the scrutiny of researchers who study the archives. Francis said, "Serious and objective historical research will allow evaluation in the correct light."
Di aprire alla consultazione dei ricercatori.
Announcing the decision to officials and staff of the Vatican Secret Archives on Monday in the Vatican's Clementine Hall, the Pope said he took the decision with a serene and confident soul. Pius, he said, had to lead the Church during one of the saddest and darkest periods of the 20th century. When Francis assumed the papacy 6 years ago, he indicated he would order the records opened. In 2013, Francis was quoted as telling a friend and rabbi, Abraham Skorka, that opening the archives of the Shoah seems reasonable, using the Hebrew word for the Holocaust. The president of the Rome Jewish community, Ruth Duraghello, said the news was positive and expressed the hope that full light will be shed on the role of Pope Pius XII during the Second World War. She added that researchers would unfortunately have to wait another year before gaining access, but better late than never. In Jerusalem, the director of the Yad Vashem Holocaust Memorial, Dr. Yael Nadim Orvieto, said making the archival material available would be an important event.
The opening of every archive is indeed very important because it enables a much more richer research. In this case especially, we are dealing with one of the major archives that contains information that will shed light on one of the most controversial and delicate topics of the Holocaust.
The decision to open the archives could speed up a canonization process for the wartime Pope. During the papacy of Benedict XVI, Pope Pius's heroic virtues were recognized, which put the late pontiff on the path to sainthood. The uproar that followed that decision led Catholic scholars to ask for a freeze of that process until a thorough study on Pius during the wartime years had been carried out. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
Exercise and diet are keys to a healthier life, as many studies show. But a heart specialist also recommends smiling. VOA's Carol Pearson has more.
Okay, one, two, three, twirl!
If anyone knows how to make you smile...
All right, big smiles.
It's photographer Kendra Martin.
I tell people to fake laugh, and they feel stupid doing it, but the result is... they're laughing, and it turns into a genuine smile.
Big grins pay off on camera and in your heart. Cardiologist Anand Chakalingam says smiling is the first step in fighting stress and its potential consequences.
When we smile, the brain wiring gets altered. The chemicals that are released are more positive.
Adrenaline increases your heart rate and blood pressure. Cortisol, the primary stress hormone, increases sugars in the bloodstream. This helps if you're truly in danger.
98, 97.
But if you have chronic stress, these hormones increase the risk of a lot of health problems, including heart disease. People under stress look for ways to cope, and that can often mean smoking, overeating, and other habits that harm your heart.
Once people smile, they are relaxing. This relaxation directly lowers blood pressure, improves sugar levels in the blood.
Dr. Chakalingam tells his patients to smile 20 times an hour.
If we are smiling, we are breaking that link between stress and the health.
Smiling is something Martin does to improve her work.
Waking up in the morning with a smile on my face, it's going to put everybody in a better mood.
And it gives everyone's heart health a little boost. Carol Pearson, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA's International Edition. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our director, Patrice Martin, and our engineer, Rob McLean. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.